Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 246th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Kerem Durdag. He was born to Turkish parents and raised in Pakistan, so considers both to be his home. For more backstory on Kerem, you can catch his November 1st, 2015 interview on newmainersspeak.com. Presently, Kerem is the President and Chief Operating Officer of GWI.net and is the founder and managing partner of the Indus Fund. It is such a pleasure to have you back on the show, Kerem. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, we're just going to have a conversation about all these things that are floating about in your world. And I wondered if you wanted to start with more of a work-related advocacy for immigrants that you're doing through GWI, or if you wanted to kick it off with the Indus Fund, which is also working to build a stronger community.
Well, let's do GWI in terms of what we're trying to do. Since we're in the middle of a pandemic and the necessity of the internet and strong infrastructure has become an absolute vital need, a couple of things that I, together with my colleagues and business partner, Fletcher Kittredge at GWI, have been working on, which is this whole effort on digital inclusion and digital equity. And the necessary thought process behind that is that in the past, and even to some extent in the present, infrastructure that's built in the United States, especially when it comes to telecommunications infrastructure, has been built predominantly to places where there's money. So in the cities, metro areas, there's infrastructure. So if you're in Portland, if you're in different kinds of metro areas in the United States, chances are that you would think that you have good internet. But that's not necessarily true. Communities of color, immigrant communities, lower income communities do not actually have access to a definable version of the internet or high-speed internet or broadband. And there's various words get thrown around. And one of the things that has become important to me is to articulate the need to correct that and articulate the urgency to correct that. This is a work that's been going on for a fairly long time, but with the pandemic, it's become a necessity where the desire to have robust, reliable, and secure infrastructure, like the internet, which is the underpinning of modern day civilization, cannot be at the expense of communities that have been disenfranchised in the past. Other than the fact it's wrong morally and ethically, I also believe that correcting the situation enables us as a society to affect the arc of the narrative, the story, which is everybody needs to be included. The price of not including everybody is immensely high. So we talk about the economic divide. The economic divide has a strong underpinning in the digital divide. So if communities of color, immigrant communities, do not have access to the internet, their ability to partake in any kind of socioeconomic development becomes extremely slow, extremely, how should I say, ponderous. And in the state like Maine, where the inclusion of the immigrants is immensely important for its future trajectory of growth, whether from a population point of view, whether from a wealth creation point of view, whether it's from a GDP point of view, job creation, all those metrics that define economic development. I don't think we can not answer the question anymore. We have to do it. I've been fortunate enough to work with the state of Maine and with our entire internet service provider ecosystem to say, look, if we're going to do certain things, we cannot just do it on the basis of what we know traditionally, but we also need to start listening to these communities that are really saying, please make me part of the solution. And so recently we've been working with social impact funds, private investors, to make sure that any infrastructure that we build has to include lower income communities of color and immigrant communities. It has to. So traditionally when people build infrastructure, they'll go and do the more highly economically developed areas first. And then they'll say, well, later we'll get there, right? Well, we're saying no. It has to be all, or we're not going to do it till we are able to do it all. We're not going to start cherry picking. And we're also trying to change this myth that even in metro areas, everybody has good internet. That's not true. So it takes a lot of fortitude, courage. It takes planning to be able to do this, but it's an absolute necessity. So that's what we're doing. And we work with Connect Maine. We work with the state of Maine. So the effort is for digital inclusion and digital equity. It's also a massive national effort. So it's an effort that is trying to get written into federal legislation, whether it's part of any infrastructure bill or the stimulus package, because including indigenous communities is now also really, really, really important as part of the conversation. It's always been important, but it's been a forgotten part of the conversation. Now it's actually getting included. Long overdue. But the idea that infrastructure should be available to everybody, and it's a societal obligation, a societal contract. And it doesn't need to be something that's all publicly owned. It should be something that is a combination between public and private. But at the end of the day, infrastructure has public benefit, has public utility. And we at GWI are what's called a B corporation, which means it's in our corporate governance DNA. It's actually written in that community, environment, vendors, employees, and stakeholders have to be part of every decision that we make. So proof is in the pudding, hold our feet to the fire, but that's what we absolutely have to do. And I think if we do it well, if we do it right, then I think it'll be something that'll survive 3-4 generations after us. Because remember, you know, the poles actually building this infrastructure came about during the rural electrification program by the feds in the 1920s. We still use it. 100 years later, we're using the same infrastructure essentially. So again, whatever we do has to survive 100 years. And it can't be at, it can't be exclusionary. It's just, it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. So just like in the past, redlining has been used in housing areas. We all know that. It's also similar in telecommunications.
Yeah, I think especially with the pandemic, you know, people who used to get up and go to work from rural homes had perfectly good internet at work. And now they are really crippled not being able to do their meetings or their education from home.
Absolutely. I mean, rural Maine, it's atrocious. You're on a meg by meg. I mean, you can't live off of that. And that's a myth, is, you know, it's not just rural Maine that's essentially on the receiving end of nothing when it comes to infrastructure. It's also now the metro areas, because the pandemic has heightened the need, heightened the bandwidth requirement. The fact that we're on video calls, it requires us to have infrastructure that can have five of those things going at the same time, because your wife does it, your partner does it, your three kids are doing it. You know, you've got the doorbell with the Ring security system. You've got your washer, dryer, TV. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the house. And so if prior to the pandemic, we thought we could get away with it in the next 10 years, it's essentially constricted that down to the next 2 to 3. You got to get this done.
So you're kind of thinking of breaking it down and building it more comprehensively for everyone from the ground up.
Correct.
From digital.
Correct.
Equity.
And we're doing it with fiber optic. So the advantage is that fiber optic, it's been around for a while. This is not something brand new, but it allows for speeds in the gigabit range, and that's for upload and download. And essentially for any, call it average house, which has up to 20 to 40 devices, up to say 5 to 7 people using it all the time, it is a breeze. It's a walk in the park. And it will be that way for many, 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 many years. It's a gigabyte today, but the fiber optic cables can carry up to a terabyte if needed be. I don't want to geek out on this because I'm a Star Trek fan, but the thing is, it's sort of like putting up electric poles and electric wires, right? When it was done, we now have electricity. And this is the same thing.
Yeah, and you're talking about employment in Maine and Maine surviving as a healthy, thriving culture,
yes.
Which people have come to Maine during this pandemic from all over the place.
Correct.
I'd love for you to tell us about the Indus Fund.
Ah, yeah. So that's pretty cool. So the last 5 or 6 years, I've been working on answering the question, how do we as a society enable the first generation Maine immigrant entrepreneur to access financial capabilities? Because at the end of the day, there are these financial instruments that are set up all over in the country. But the immigrant business owner doesn't participate in it. It doesn't participate in it because, A, the system is geared towards a certain way of asking questions. And it's geared in a certain way of demanding requirement satisfaction, right? So the first-generation business immigrant owner doesn't come here with a credit history or, you know, that's by Experian.
Or even a bank account in the past.
Or a bank account.
Yeah.
It's not like they have 10 years of experience that they can put on a piece of paper. It's not like they know the language that well to be able to navigate the infrastructure. It's not like they have a network to be able to call. It's not like they know the ins and outs. It's not like they know how to be able to progress from point A to point B in a very natural way. So I thought, well, what if we work with the banks and allow them to take a larger risk at the outset, which is, you know, banks by nature are risk averse. That's why they're banks. But they have enormous capability. They have enormous muscle. They have enormous processes that are set up that allow a business to grow as it grows. What I decided was that I would create an investment fund that would work with the bank, that would help them underwrite the loan. And the loans would be below market rate, so like 3.5%. Remember, when Maine immigrant business owners go and try to get loans, it is not unheard that they have paying 25% interest rate. 25. What? It is not unheard. So we need to change that. We need to evolve that dynamic. So what if it's 3.5%? And if you work with a bank that already has the processes established, now you're not reinventing the wheel. If you work with a bank that already has trust and veracity within that community, now you're enabling that community to participate. What if we also got the state of Maine to be involved and allow for a mentor pool to surround the Maine immigrant business owners with capability, advice, and capacity? So, hey, that'd be a good thing. And what if we got the private sector, essentially the investment community, my very dear peers, colleagues, and friends, to say, you know what, we believe in our dollar helping the immigrant business owner take that and make 10 out of it, whether it's to hire more people, whether it's to buy more equipment, whether it's to sell more goods and services, fine. But we believe that this is an ecosystem worth participating in. And now the conversation hopefully will change because you have the multiple stakeholders in our Maine society saying, aha, now we can actually work together. So the Indus Fund is working with Seaport Credit Union, which is a fantastic partner. And the Maine immigrant business owner, if they wish to get up a loan up to $10,000 with an interest rate of 3.5%, can go and apply as long as there's some plan that is articulated. Chances are they'll be able to be a successful loan applicant. And then once they apply, and if they're fortunate enough to get the loan, then a couple of things happen. They get the mentor pool. They're part of the networking. If they succeed, now they create a credit history. So instead of, you know, next time if they pay it off, then they can ask for a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000. Right now, they can call the people that are interested in working with them. I've been very, very fortunate in my life. Very lucky. And to get together with a bunch of us, you know, we can say, look, here are certain things you can do. But we're the statistical outliers in Maine. We should not be the statistical outliers. So that's the goal. So we started October 15th. So it's up and running. People can visit the website, theindusfund.com, and partake in the process. It's a 10-year fund, so we're not going anywhere. It'll be $1 million in size. Right now, we're a third of the way, but it's operational.
So is anybody else doing this kind of work like the Indus Fund has come up with?
As far as I'm aware, nobody in the country is doing that, which is a goal of ours so that if we can show that we're successful in Maine, they should be successful anywhere. If there are entities doing this, and they well may be, I just don't know of them. It may have been considered as a private grant giving, philanthropic. This is not a philanthropy. This is a loan. You have to pay back. And part of it is we would like that Maine immigrant business owner to get into the sort of the rhythm of taking advantage of the financial infrastructure, their expectations from both parties.
Love it. And it's something like 3 times more likely, right? Immigrants are 3 times more likely to start a business than an American person.
It's a cultural leaning. It's also a way for self-determining one's life. It's a way for immigrant families to contribute with a very high level sense of immediacy. And so it's part of our cultural calibration.
I think it's brilliant. Theindusfund.org.
.com.
Oh, thanks. Theindusfund.com.
Because it's for profit.
Hey, if you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Karem Durdag. He's kind of a Renaissance man, as you may have already realized in this conversation. Beyond his corporate work and board work, he's also a family man, an athlete, a storyteller, and performer, an angel investor, and I saw on your LinkedIn page, you've got 7 patents.
Yeah. So, like I said, I think I'm blessed with a left brain and a right brain. So,
and a big corpus callosum connecting them both.
I hope so.
I read about you in the Portland Press Herald recently.
You did?
Yeah, it was for the Portland Ovations.
The coming Portland up. Ovations gig? Yeah,
tell us what you're going to do for them.
So that's a very joyful thing I'm doing. So I've been writing poetry for a very long time. I've edited poetry magazines, written a play, a whole bunch of screenplays. So I come from a theater background also. So thank you, St. John's University, for giving me that also. So for a long time, I've been working on these songs. And happiness, because I'm trilingual, I listen to a lot of music, And I also watch a lot of movies. I'm sort of a movie fanatic. So for the longest time, I've been working on these songs with some intent to articulate the journey of the immigrant. And this has been going on for maybe a decade. And then over the last couple of years, the songs sort of started coalescing into trying to tell a story. So then I got intrigued. So I said, well, how about if I wrote a screenplay or maybe write a play? And then I was doodling and niddling and biddling. And then my wife said, the whole point, if you're going to tell a story, maybe you use a uniquely American art form. And that happens to be a musical. So a year ago, I said, well, maybe I can write a musical with these songs. Maybe I can have a little bit of a mini movie in it, mini animation, because those things are in my head all the time. And then if I write these songs, can I convince one of my very dear friends who's a professional musician to actually put it to music? And then if we did that, could we put a chorus in it? And then if we did that, and so this thing sort of bloomed and then it sort of stuck together. So somehow the good people at Portland Ovations found out about it. I think it's because of Mary Ellen Lindemann, who's the owner of Coffee by Design, a very, very dear friend. I think she's on the Portland Ovations board. I was telling her about, oh, this is going to take me 5 years, maybe a decade. And then I think she let them know about that. And they have this really cool intention to include immigrant voices in part of their artistic endeavors over the next many, 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 many years, intentionally, with agency, with support, and the local artists, right? So Amy Petron, who's the executive director, approached me and said, well, I've heard that you're working on this musical. And I said, well, only 3 people on the planet know about this. And now it's 4. So what are you talking about? She said, well, how about if we support you to do this? We'd like to commission it. And would you and your writing partner commit to it? And we were like,
I'm not throwing away my shot.
Yeah. So people have asked me, so is this going to be like Hamilton? And I said, well, if we can convince Lin-Manuel Miranda to come in and just watch the 15-minute whatever we're going to create and then say it's actually good, you never know. Sure. So we got selected. And so we have a year to put together a work product for the community. And then another 2 after that, if the community likes it, then there's a chance that we would do some sort of production on it. And if we do that, then maybe somebody would like to take it to the next level, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a possibility. Or it may completely stink and nobody wants it. So it's a story of an immigrant. It spans 30 years. It's got multiple timelines because both the male and the female characters are immigrants. So their lives both weave into each other. Over this span, a good amount of it is actually based on my life and then on my wife's life. Actually, most of it is. The songs are representative of this insanity that we have about melding Middle Eastern music and then our love for all things sort of 80s, 90s rock. Andy Happel, who is my partner in crime, he's a professional musician. He had a band called Thanks to Gravity, which was with Capitol Records in the day. We were at both actually University of New Hampshire. I was in graduate school. He was an undergraduate. So I've known him for a very, very long time. He's actually my daughter's violin teacher. The life sort of circles around, melds into this curious little thing. We put together 5 songs, which we played for some people, and people have really adored it. So we know we're onto something.
You're off and running.
We're actually going to post that up in the next couple of days. And then we've written 30 songs. The lyrics are done. And then we just got to put some music to it. I'm working on the dialogue. I'm working on the mini movie part. I'm working on the mini animation part.
Do you sleep?
I do very well. Very, very well. I do.
I don't know how you get it all done, Krim.
I don't know either. I like to maximize the minute. And I don't believe in perfection. I believe in just doing it. And if it gets to 90%, I'm pretty happy. I'm blessed with this really lacking artistic discipline in revisions. I don't revise much, but it has worked for me with it so far.
I like that on your indiespun.com website where you wrote, you have an inherent strong bias toward change.
Yeah.
That's such a great sentence. And it sounds like you're not hung up on revisions. You're moving forward. Let's not just think about it. Let's go ahead and write this musical.
Yeah, part of it is my fear quotient is fairly low. That's one. Two, because I've been doing this for a while, I think we have a certain amount of grounded faith in our ability to articulate certain things. But yeah, I think for me, you have to evolve. You have to take the risk. You're surrounded by love and grace. So as long as you know where you want to get to and it's done with transparency and honesty, it should work out. And frankly, I'm not worried that it will stink. If it stinks, you know, it'll be one more sort of reference point along the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to fail. No, God, no. No, I have bombed spectacularly on so many different levels. But, you know, on the other side, when I've succeeded, it's been the height of just freaking heaven, right? So I think that comes from being an immigrant because, you know, when you set on this journey and you give up everything to be on this journey, I think you have a certain amount of the DNA of the universe going, yeah, we get it. And you tend to sort of combine these things in your DNA. And you get this resilience, survivability. And I do think you end up surrounding yourself with just good people. I think if I hadn't had a life where I felt I was gifted with certain things and I didn't feel a responsibility to gift it back to the universe, I don't think these things would be happening to me all the time. You know, I just love what Mary Allen is doing. I love, obviously, everything else that's been going on in the ecosystem. But I seem to intersect with the people I think the universe is saying you should just keep on intersecting. And maybe that's why Lin-Manuel and I will have a really good conversation. You have to sort of keep the love and grace sort of ever present in a way. And you just get by, right? You just get by every day. You just get by. I don't know.
You stay connected to that, which is important to you. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah, it is. And we got to sing. I mean, we got to write these. It's just not like, you know, these songs, they just come. I think from my ancestors.
And from your experiences. They're authentic. Experiences.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it'd be some good tooth-telling in there. I mean, I was talking with Andy the other day. There's going to be some parts of it that are really, really hard for people to hear. But we have, as immigrants, gone through this, right? If people have called you names, people have physically, verbally assaulted you, people have marginalized you, you know, and yet you're finding this way to participate, to not be the other, to lean in and say, no, we are not going to be defined by the lackings of society, but rather we're going to make sure that we are elevating our humanity. I think those things really, really need to be heard. And from the perspective of somebody or the community that has intimately gone through that in the current day and age, this is not something that occurred 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 150 years. I'm talking in the last 20 to 30 years. And I hope that I can voice that. I hope. I can only hope. And there's a selfish part of me that, you know, I grew up singing a lot of Pakistani and Turkish songs, and I really, really, really want to crank out a couple. So I promised that to my high school friends. I promised that to my cousins. I really, really want somebody to belt those out. I think, you know, that's the selfish part. But hey, you know, it's all right.
I think that sounds fun, and I look forward to hearing it. Is there a name for your musical yet?
There isn't yet. No, there isn't.
Untitled.
The working title is Soul Roar.
I like that.
That's the working title.
Yeah. But if people want to see you in action prior to this bit at Portland Ovations, when Soul Roar hits the stage, they can find you at Pecha Kucha.
They can find me at Pecha Kucha. They can also find me on Facebook, but yeah, Pecha Kucha. So in February, I've been asked to participate with the community to do one. So it's 6 minutes and 40 seconds, 20 slides, 20 seconds. The topic is home. I'm not going to be talking per se. It's going to be a performance, like maybe a poem that will spread over the 20 slides. And the 20 slides should be, hopefully, if I do this smartly enough, should obviously track what the poem is saying. But I'm really excited about it because I love storytelling. I've done it a long time, but I've never done it in this specific format.
It's a bit of a poem too, isn't it? So
yes.
For people that don't know, it's a night where maybe 10 performers get up and tell something that they know about a passion project. And you get someone else is in charge of the clicker. This is that when is... PowerPoints get good, when someone else is in charge of the clicker. And so you get 20 seconds for 20 slides, and then you're done. They ring the bell. You sit down.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's really getting to see a bunch of people's different portfolios or show and tell for adults. How would people find it? It's not going to be in person, is it?
No, this one will not be, unfortunately. But I'm sure there's a link that will be shared, and it's for everybody. It's for the entire public. I am sure that I should be able to sort of provide that.
Okay.
On Facebook and stuff. But yeah.
I'll link it to the show, to newmanerspeak.com.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. That'd be great. They've been wonderful. They've been absolutely wonderful.
And they operate out of many towns in Maine and all over the country and all over the world. It started in Japan.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
I love how you're not afraid of change. You're a person with the gift of being able to see the possibilities in the world. And then you help the rest of us to see them and then charge off into the sunset, making it happen. I'm so grateful for you to take the time to visit with us today. Thanks so much for being on the show again.
Oh, Kate, you're so wonderful. You're kidding me. We're not in by ourselves. We're all in this together. So thank you for doing what you do. Are you kidding me?
I love it.
I'm but a humble passenger in the vehicle. You're driving the bus. So.
Never thought of myself as a bus driver.
Now you do, you see?
Yeah, I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Karem has selected for us. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about this song as we head into it.
So the song is Ultraviolet by U2 from their album Achtung Baby. So you know why I love it? Because it talks about lighting our way. And I think it's our responsibility, our moral, ethical, and financial obligation to light the way for society. Light our transformation into becoming participating individuals, into a social contract that allows us all to participate in 21st century, to be able to solve this climate crisis, to solve this digital divide and economic divide. I think the song has a promise, and I've been fortunate enough to see it live, and it's blisteringly emotive, blisteringly. And I just love it. I just adore the song.